This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Up next, Alan Jaffe is joined by Michael Blaha, Director of Clinical Research at the Cicerone Center for the Prevention of Cardiovascular Disease and Professor of Medicine at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. They cover No Contest, Calcium Scoring Beats Risk Scores, and Should Be More Broadly Performed.
To set the stage, Michael, can you tell us what the guidelines suggest?
Absolutely. So I really like the new 2018 American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology prevention guidelines. So in 2013, there's actually almost a step back in terms of the recommendation for calcium scoring. It received a 2B recommendation with a vague statement about when the decision to treat is uncertain. That was a little vague. 2018 guidelines thankfully came with a more solid, specific recommendation for calcium scoring. There's now a 2A recommendation standing out from other tests as the best test to define risk prediction in the broad borderline to intermediate risk group, and that's those folks with a 5 to 20% 10-year risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease using the pooled cohort equations. So the guidelines now specify whom to test, that broad intermediate risk group, giving a 2A recommendation specifically saying that the calcium score is a better risk predictor than most other tests that you could consider. And it also talks a little bit how to use that test, talking about how calcium scores of zero might make you more reassured about a patient's risk, while higher calcium scores might push you to be more aggressive with lifestyle and preventive pharmacotherapy.
What, when you say is more elevated, do you mean? Are you talking about a specific cut point, or are you talking about a continuum?
Great question. So really, I think when we think about calcium scoring, we need to think about the scores between zero and 100 or so as being the most actionable. When a score is zero, we know that patient's lower risk than we thought. And that's a good rationale, as the guidelines say, for considering lifestyle therapy first before considering, let's say, aggressive pharmacotherapy in most patients. Now, when the score is non-zero, especially in a middle-aged participant, middle-aged patient, it says when a patient's above the age of 55, for example, and you've got a non-zero score, that's when you're going to consider using a statin for that patient. And when scores are above 100, not 300 like in the old guidelines, but above 100, in nearly all patients we're going to consider treating with a statin and perhaps an aspirin to prevent cardiovascular disease risk. So really, we're talking about zero. We're talking about 1 to 100 being a group that we're going to really strongly consider, especially when the percent that puts someone at a greater than the 75th percentile for age, gender, and sex, and scores above 100 where we're definitely going to think about statin therapy.
A side question that is important, I think, to our listeners, is 100 a value that is quality assured across all the scanners, or is it 75th percentile what people ought to use? Which metric?
Good point. We're really talking about absolute scores versus relative scores, and that always comes up, and it's a great question. So first of all, I'll say that the calcium score is a highly, highly reproducible value because you do the calcium scoring protocol the same way in any scanner in the world. And we score right now using the Agatston scoring protocol, which has an inter-scan reproducibility of about 10%. So it's a pretty solid metric, and it's very easy, as you know, to score one of these scans. Now, in terms of the absolute versus the relative score, of course, the absolute score is the best predictor of 10-year risk, and the relative score is the best predictor of lifetime risk trajectory. So, for example, if you were a young patient and you had a non-zero score, you're short-term risk might be lower, but your lifetime risk is high. For example, a 45-year-old with a score of 50 is very, very abnormal in terms of probably being about the 95th percentile, and that person's lifetime risk could be high, although the absolute risk would be lower since the absolute score is a little lower. Now, an older patient, for example, a 70-year-old patient with a score of 50 would be at a lower percentile because of the older age. And there would be, for example, less aggressive, perhaps, about preventive pharmacotherapy because that person would be below the 75th percentile. So we really consider both numbers. We consider the absolute score to predict the 10-year risk and then the percentile to predict the lifetime risk trajectory. And that's the rationale for treating younger patients with abnormal scores, for example, with a statin.
Calcium scoring has in the past competed with a variety of other metrics, CRP, Lp(a), and there are all kinds of new tests, TMAO, ceramides. How do you think about calcium scoring vis-a-vis some of these older and newer innovations?
It's really a fantastic question. We've really spent 10 or 15 years in this field of comparative effectiveness of biomarkers. And the guidelines come down strongly, as we do in our group. The calcium score is the single best test to add cardiovascular risk prediction on top of, for example, the pooled cohort equations. That's pretty much established now. There's been head-to-head studies with things like brachial FMD, CRP, ABI testing, other serum biomarkers, like you mentioned, inflammatory biomarkers. And the calcium score, by being a direct measure of the burden of atherosclerosis in the coronary arteries that individualizes risk, comes out ahead of those tests, other tests for cardiovascular disease risk prediction. So while there's many other tests can be helpful, for example, an Lp(a) test I get regularly in my patients with family histories or with dyslipidemias, they really should be thought of differently. The calcium score is the best risk predictor, and the guidelines say that it can help differentiate both lower risk and higher risk. It can risk stratify patients. It can move patients further down or further up the risk continuum. While other tests, for example, like an Lp(a) being elevated, South Asian ancestry, the presence of the metabolic syndrome, for example, are what's called risk-enhancing factors. Those can move your risk up if you have them, but they don't really reassure you if you don't have them. For example, if your Lp(a) is normal, you can't say for sure that you're a low-risk patient. So what the guidelines say to do is start with the pooled cohort equations, consider for the presence of other risk-enhancing factors, like at high Lp(a), and then if you're in that intermediate risk zone and you're uncertain, consider a calcium score to both consider stratifying towards lower risk or stratifying towards higher risk. So these all work together, but the calcium score is the single best test to move patients both up and down the risk spectrum.
Would you use calcium scoring in any other circumstance that is not articulated by the guidelines?
That's a great question. There are a couple sets of guidelines out there about calcium scoring, and I was a part of the 2017 Society of Cardiovascular CT guidelines that really predated the 2018 ACC/AHA guidelines, although they look quite similar. But the one group that the SCCT guidelines identify specifically that aren't as covered as directly in the ACC/AHA guidelines are lower-risk patients with family histories, with family history of premature disease. The SCCT guidelines say in patients with risk less than 5% who have a family history, consider calcium scoring in the context of shared decision-making. I really like that because I see a lot of patients who are lower risk by virtue of their age, but they have this strong family history, and they want to know if they're afflicted by early atherosclerosis like their family members are. So I really like that application of calcium scoring as well. Now, there's other ways we use calcium scoring in our clinic, too. I like calcium scoring for statin intolerant patients to help decide how aggressive to be with a lipid-lowering therapy in these intolerant patients. And I like calcium scoring sometimes just as a tool for motivating lifestyle behavior, because a lot of my patients can change their lifestyle for the better when they know that they're, for example, at higher risk.
What are the clinical factors that clinicians ought to keep in mind in evaluating a calcium score, whether it's medications or family history or things of that sort?
So the calcium score of zero has really taken on this great prominence in medical decision-making these days. It's one of the strongest negative risk factors, so-called, as Dr. Khurram Nasir coined the term, the power of zero. But there are certain instances where you should be careful in over-interpreting a calcium score of zero. For example, in familial hypercholesterolemia, those patients, of course, are very high risk because of the genetic lipid disorder. When calcium scores of zero, it might be a rationale maybe not to use as expensive of add-on non-statin therapy, but it should not stop you from using a statin, of course, to treat that dyslipidemia. In smokers, we know that smokers have risk, for example, of thrombosis, that's not necessarily accounted for by the calcium score. So in active smokers who have calcium scores of zero, the guidelines say also be careful about reassuring that patient in the same way you would a average risk patient, because that patient still has that smoking risk. So I would say that we need to interpret the calcium score in the context of things like genetic dyslipidemias and active smoking. But the average risk patient with maybe a risk factor or at least just a middle-aged man, that is where the calcium score of zero can be quite reassuring.
Where is this field going? Every field is evolving technologically, and I'm sure there's some new innovations. Are we apt to see them soon?
I think we will be. I'll comment on two things about calcium scoring that are changing. Number one, I think we'll see in the next couple of years a new calcium score that maybe will supplant, perhaps, the Agatston score. And I've written about this in a recent review in JACC Imaging. But it turns out the Agatston score has some limitations. For example, it upweights your calcium score by density. We know now that lower attenuation plaques, lower density plaques, are higher risk than high-density plaques. Actually, if you inversely weight the calcium score by density instead of positively weighting it like the Agatston score, you predict risk better. Turns out the distribution of calcium within the coronary tree matters. The more diffuse your calcium is, whether it's in the left main, matters. And a variety of other ways that we could change calcium scoring in the future to predict risk even better. The other thing I'll comment on is a movement towards doing what we call qualitative calcium scoring on non-gated chest CTs. For example, when the radiologist interprets a lung cancer screening CT or any non-gated chest CT, you can still see calcium in the coronary arteries. Now, you can't do an official Agatston score because that's an ungated study. You can qualitatively look at that study and very reproducibly say whether there's none, mild, moderate, or severe calcium. And now the Society of Cardiovascular CT and Society of Thoracic Radiology give a class one recommendation for radiologists or cardiologists looking at a CT scan to at least qualitatively interpret the calcium score, because there's added risk information that's just sitting there in the chart that we need to be using. So what I think we'll see is a movement towards qualitative calcium scoring on all chest CTs and perhaps a new calcium score in the future that will predict risk even better than the Agatston score does.
Well, hopefully when those things evolve, you'll come back and inform us and inform our listeners so they can use them in the best way possible.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much, Michael.
This is Spencer King, editor-in-chief of Axcel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axcel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axcel.